What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.
Dirt and Sprague.
I would just say it's kind of embarrassing. I mean, honestly, it's just embarrassing that that's where we are. I don't blame the kids and people trying to take advantage of the system. I just think it's embarrassing where we are with college football. And we've been there for a while. So I just keep my energy, my focus on and my energy on the things that I control and the things that matter. And that's these kids here and our team. But, you know, all that outside stuff, I mean, we just kind of, no pun intended, we just stay in our lane.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
Another 1-2. Fly ball, forked out to center field. It's flying away. It's a home run. Light tower power inside Fenway Park. Lázaro Montes with an absolute missile. Welcome to the show.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right. 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader. 105.1 The Fan and The Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Hello.
Hump day.
Yes, indeed. Happy hump day, everybody.
What is happening?
Feeling good on a little Wednesday morning here.
Dude, a little chilly in the air, a little rain in the forecast. Yeah. Football season, baby.
Yeah, rain's supposed to start right at the end of the show.
Let's go, baby.
It's really good. It'd be great for the forest fires
yes,
to go away.
Yes, it will. Cool everything off. Come on. Get your pumpkins out. You ready to go? You got your Halloween decorations
Stop
up yet?
It.
It's going to be 80 on Monday.
I know. Give us a little reprieve at least before it warms up again. We got a pumpkin on the front porch.
Are you really ready?
I'm so ready.
You're ready for the weather to completely turn the other way?
100%. I am there. I'm ready for sweatshirt weather and sweatpant weather, man. Mm. Give it to me. Inject it in my veins.
What month does that become annoying?
February.
All the way to February?
I'm good until football season's
so
over.
So rain and cold can be here for 6 months.
Football's filling my hole. I'm okay.
Summer is only a 2-month thing for you.
It won't be 6 months because we're usually good through October. Like, it's not terrible. October is okay for the most part. November is when things start to get doomy and gloomy. And then you got November, December, January, but you're going through the holidays.
February's terrible.
There's football season. And then when the Super Bowl happens, then it's like, all right, I'm ready for spring.
And then March is not very good.
March is usually terrible.
April's kind of crappy.
February, March, April is when I hit my weather lull and I start complaining the opposite direction. And then, at the end of the summer, I'm ready, dude. I'm ready for some rain.
The dream would be a snowbird someday.
Dude, give me a snowbird lifestyle.
Oh,
I need seasons. I was up cleaning out my gutters yesterday because it's going to rain. Those things are packed. I had to clean them all out.
When I was building my fence, my buddy just happened to be, we were taking a quick water break. He just happened to look up and he goes, oh, you need new gutters. And I went,
no, not right now, dude.
How much is that? He's
$3,500.
Dude.
I just put in a new fence. Come on.
I'm broke it'll be right now.
Not right now. We'll do that one next year, right? Put that one on the
we'll
docket.
Do that in 2 years. That gutter looks hot. It looks fine. I don't care. It's got a little rust on it.
Get out of here.
That adds character.
I got nails falling out. Doesn't matter, dude. We got a giant pine tree over our house, and the gutters are just filled with pine needles. They are everywhere.
I feel bad. I cut another tree down in my backyard, although this one's a tiny little one, and it was shaded, so it wasn't full of life.
Yeah.
And my wife wanted to keep it. I'm like, dude, I think we could clear this out and it'd open a little more space for us.
Yeah, get that thing out of there.
And I got rid of another tree the year before. It was a bigger one. And I feel bad cutting trees down.
Sorry, tree.
But also, I would not want to be next to big trees.
No, it terrifies me every time it's super windy outside.
Yeah.
We got four of them around the house, and every time you get one of those hey, it's 40 mile an hour winds and it's raining here, there's a pucker factor inside. You look at them, they're swaying a little bit. I don't even want to know how much it would cost to cut down some of these trees, because I'm not kidding you. I think the one in my backyard.
Oh, it's a few grand.
Legitimately is 70 feet in the air. So maybe I'm exaggerating, but it is massive.
I think I paid $1,000.
To get a big one cut down?
To get a big one cut down, yeah.
How tall are we talking?
Not that tall.
Not that tall.
I mean, it's tall. It was tall, obviously, right? Yeah. If I wasn't, I would have just done it myself.
Right.
But not as tall as your tree.
The stress of that, it would be terrifying for me as somebody who does that for a living. It's legitimately over in between and kind of hanging over two different houses, my house and my neighbor's house. Of cutting those branches and not having one fall down on the house. I could not handle that pressure.
You ever watch those videos of the guys? There's two videos that you could consume in this. There's the guys who strap around the tree, and you watch them do it, and you're like, holy crap.
How is this possible?
And then there's the guys who do that, but they cut it wrong, and it will fall on the
house. No, go the other way. Push it the other way.
Sometimes I can't help but watch the mistakes.
Yeah, right.
You're like, damn.
Yeah, hopefully you have insurance, man. That's going to cost you a lot of money to rebuild that SOB.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it something I've wondered... How lucrative is that business?
It has to be lucrative.
If you're
risking your life to do a job, I would hope that you make a decent amount of money doing it. That's one of those, like, if you get the, like, I want to cut that tree down, I go through the process, somebody submits a bill, I can't even be angry about the price.
Well, here's another thing.
You're climbing, like, 50 feet into the air.
How many times does somebody get a tree cut down just for the sake of, like, I don't want it to blow over one day, or I don't like it, versus necessary? What's that percentage? Because I would say it's vastly the, I don't like it, or I'm scared of it. 85-15,
I would say. 85 to 15 would be my breakdown.
So I'm going to say something controversial here. I appreciate people who do the job.
Yes.
Much like we pointed out about ourselves yesterday.
Could not do that.
Cutting a tree down? Useless skill?
Oh, useless.
Profitable skill.
Profitable skill.
I'm not, no doubt.
Profitable.
But if 85% of the time we're cutting big trees down is just simply aesthetics and
I want this out of here.
Future vibes.
Yeah, I want to clear out my backyard.
You're just doing it for cosmetic purposes. That's
the vast majority of them are for cosmetic
purposes. Okay, why do golf courses do it? Sometimes they blow over or get struck by lightning, but most of the time it's like, this tree's in the way.
A few more courses should cut a few more trees down.
No, they need to cut a lot
argue.
More trees down. Yeah. It actually is healthier for the grass to get more sunlight.
Thank you. And it gives me a chance to get back on the fairway if I hit a wayward tee shot, all right? Help me out a little bit. Can you give me a few windows and gaps around here?
There was a local muni that had a tree cut down, and I went, God, that just opened the whole fairway
the
up
The whole
for me.
Thing is
I
totally...
I can miss left or right.
It's all changed
now.
It's so funny when you go play places that are wide open, and you could just spray it all over, and you get up to your ball, and you're like, oh, like, I got a full swing here. This could be okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's some thought, too, that if you go back to, you know, older courses... Those trees weren't that big when the course was originally designed.
No, it's totally changed the way they designed it.
Yeah, I had two trees in the back deck area where we were having to do the fence line. And they're great trees because they shade us really well on the deck.
Love a good shade tree.
And when they fill out with the leaves every spring and summer, it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, then you got to pick up all the leaves. But yeah, you get that beauty for a couple weeks of the year.
But I knew doing the fence posts around those trees was going to be very problematic. There's like nothing but root over there.
Right.
And it was. It was a big pain in the arse. But when I asked my buddy, I said, like, how did they do this fence last time around all these roots? He goes, well, they planted the trees when they built the fence.
Probably the same time.
Ah, that does make sense.
So they just put the fence in. There's the tree. There's no big roots in this bad boy
yet.
You got ground you could dig into around this fence area.
Yeah. But, the weather is turning, which means football's here, which means I'm having to start thinking about how I'm navigating my weekend.
Yeah, what are you going to do? When are you going to time out things?
What am I going to eat?
When are the kids' sporting events? Like, are we doing soccer? Are we doing any fall events?
You know, I don't know. I haven't actually made that decision yet. My daughter used to do cross country in the fall in middle school. I haven't heard her say anything about doing that.
Don't
in
think
the fall.
That's going to continue this year.
I mean, she's not doing it because she's amazing at it. She's doing it because it's good exercise and she doesn't mind running.
Right, it's a good way to stay in shape.
My youngest may or may not do basketball. I think she's. I kind of gave them both the summer off to a certain extent. I said, you know, just enjoy your summer. I'm not going to force the sports on you every other day.
Have fun every day. Do what you want to do.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm kind of at a point in my life where I'm very. Pro play a team sport thing, but also weirdly sitting in this opinion of kind of want them to do what they're interested in, and if sports happens to not be that,
that's okay. You got to find something else.
That would kind of bum me out, though.
Yeah, I get that balance. That would be tough because I think anybody who's played sports at a high level, older, you understand the impacts that it has on your life, the teamwork, the camaraderie, working hard, common goal, like all the things that you get out of it. And I don't have enough experience in other things in life to know whether you get that or not in other avenues. And I'm sure that you do, right? Like you become like a theater kid. I'm sure it's the same thing. You're working together with
the
other
jazz
kids.
Jazz band.
Like there's other ways that you can find that kind of camaraderie and that common goal and the team aspect of it.
Well, what would you do if Teddy literally just didn't want to do anything?
I'd be pretty bummed.
Like, I'm just going to do school, play video games, hang out with my friends, Dad, during football season.
I'd be pretty bummed. I'm not going
to
lie.
That's a tough one to take with PAX because we tried a couple of team sport things.
Yeah.
Never
wanted to do it.
All I wanted to do was go to the skate park, ride a skateboard, ride a scooter, whatever.
Look at him now. He's a snowboarding whiz.
Exactly.
As long as you have something that you're passionate about, that would alleviate the pain for me. Okay, you have something else that you want to go do.
And he was active.
Yes.
I didn't want him sitting on the couch playing video games. And so he could go down there. He'd come back. He was tired and sweaty and all that stuff.
Right.
Was
like, you're outside all day.
You're active. You're out there. You're being social. You're talking to other kids.
You're getting your vitamin D.
It's not my thing. I had to readjust my brain. It wasn't his particular thing. But not seeing him play. You know, soccer or basketball, or we tried lacrosse.
Ooh.
No.
None of it landed.
None of it hit.
The concept of practice and drills and team and waiting your turn and all, it just didn't register with
me. I was laughing the other, my niece is, she just started soccer practice this week and they practice at the park right by our house. So Teddy and I walked down Monday night to go see her and just cheer her on at practice. It was fun. It's a 2-minute walk. And they were leaving practice, and I said, you didn't play soccer last year. She said, no. And I said, so do you like playing soccer? And she said, no.
I said,
why are you doing it then? She said, well, my mom's making me do it.
See,
I said, well,
this is where I'm stuck. Is that the right thing to do?
I don't know. It's a balance because there's part of me, like I quit basketball after 8th grade. Mm-hmm. It was the only one I didn't continue into high school. I continued baseball and football.
What did you do during the winter?
Work out. I mean,
you didn't play a sport?
No sport. I didn't do a winter sport. I just did a fall sport and a spring sport.
Gotcha.
And there's a part of me, like I'm small. I'm not the most, it was just not my sport. It wasn't jam.
Yeah.
But there's a little part of me that always regretted not playing in high school. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then you look back and you're like, well, that was my only window to play basketball for the rest of my life outside of pickup runs here or there, like on an actual team. And there's a part of me that has always regretted that. So,
but if you wouldn't have played and you would have been at the end of the bench, and even though you're lovable, it'd be
totally
like, I was on the team, but I really wasn't because I never played.
I think if I had that freshman year, I would have quit probably after freshman year. But like, just give it a shot 1 year. You never know, right?
Right.
Like if you're actually playing basketball, you could always get better at it. But then you stop playing the sport once you stop playing it on a team.
Yeah.
And so there's that balance of like, sometimes your kids don't know what's best for them. And you want to kind of steer them in a certain direction, but also respecting their autonomy and what they want to do.
Yeah, I had a kid on my daughter's basketball team that I coached, and she's a great kid. And I was asking if she was going to play soccer as they get into high school. And she said, yeah. And I go, do you like soccer? And she goes, no, I kind of, I hate it. And I go, why do you play? She plays on the team for the school, and she does like her own club thing.
So that's a big chunk of the calendar year.
And she's a really good athlete. She's like a stud. She's like aggressive in the way that you want an athlete to be aggressive.
Right. A lot of kids are aggressive at that age.
No. Yeah. And I'm like, well, why do you play? And she's like, my mom. And I really think about that a little bit of like, it's got to be. It is good for them.
Yes, yeah, so they're staying active. They're staying in shape. There's, you know.
I don't want to be overbearing parent. It's weird because nobody ever would like force me to do anything.
Right. What you wanted to do that season was what you wanted to do.
I quit
that
playing
season.
Baseball going into high school.
Yeah.
I love playing center field. I love base running. I hate hitting. It was terrifying to me. I was like, I don't trust these kids throwing a ball at me.
Nobody knows where that pitch is going.
And so I didn't play baseball in high school. And eventually I picked up tennis just because it was something I wanted to do something. And
right. In the spring season, you wanted something else to do.
God knows I wasn't doing track and field.
No, that wasn't happening.
It always looked so boring. They're standing around taking turns, waiting for 35 minutes to do something.
It lasts
a minute and a half. And I'm like, I'd rather play tennis.
That was my event.
Tennis was challenging. It was active the whole time.
Underrated active, man.
It's also an underrated team sport because I was in doubles.
Right.
And then also, like, even if you're a singles player, you're not separated from everybody. You are practicing in single scenarios, but, like, your teammates are all around you. And then when you play,
you're cheering
everybody's watching the singles match and they're rooting for you. So it still had, like, a team aspect to it.
Do you regret not playing baseball?
I'd be lying if I didn't have a couple sick-ass beer league softball center field catches that I was like, I should have played baseball.
How good could I have been? A couple of diving catches in the gap, right? I still got it, baby.
I always wondered, like, if I ever played, did I ever tap into the sport I may have been the best at?
That's a great question.
See, like, you probably wonder this about golf, do you not?
Without a doubt. If I would have played it at a serious level at a younger age,
right. How
much different is my golf game now?
I think about the kind of athleticism I have, which is not good, and then, like, my build. And I just wonder always, I'm like, maybe I should have tried soccer more seriously. Because when I was a kid and I played it, I did kind of dominate.
You got those long legs, man. You got those long strides.
But then, unfortunately, I'm a child of the 90s. Guess what got made fun of a lot?
Yeah, soccer got made
soccer,
fun of a lot.
So guess who gets into tackle football?
Right, I'm not playing soccer.
Right?
I ain't no pansy.
Baseball, again, I had a fear of being thrown at, but like I did love playing defense and kind of being in the uniform.
See, and this highlights the difficulty of it because your kid at the 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade level, they might not want to do something, but it might be in their best interest that they continue to do it. There's a balance there. Nobody knows what the right or wrong answer is.
No, there's no doubt.
I get the idea of not wanting to, like, if your kid's legitimately, like, yelling at you, like, no, I don't want to do it, and you're still forcing them to do it, that's one thing. If it's another, like, fine, I'll play soccer, that to me is a little bit more of a soft landing of, like, yeah, we're going to keep you active. You're going to go play the sport.
Well, you have two boys coming, and I'm...
I do.
It's a sick part of me to say this out loud. There is a small part of me that is going to find it hilarious if, and it's not going to happen because Teddy Ballgame carries around sports equipment
everywhere he goes.
If neither one of them end up liking or caring about sports, and you're in your house as a 50-year-old watching sports,
watching
by yourself,
a duck game on a Saturday,
who's winning, Dad? Yeah. Ducks. All right, cool. Leaving.
Are they the blue team or are they the orange team?
And
or
he leaves and you're just like, go Ducks.
Go Ducks, Teddy.
Teddy.
This was our dream. We had a chance. Dude, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am for Saturday. I'm building this up in my mind and it's probably going to disappoint. Last time we took Teddy to a game, he was like 1.5. Didn't know
it's
what
a very young age to go.
He didn't
to a
know what was
game.
Going on. He was not in the mood to sit still and watch the game, right? Like none of that was going to happen, and so it was kind of like, all right, this is a bit of a bummer and a letdown, but still fun nonetheless for him to run around and have fun.
Yeah,
I'm building it up in my head of like he's going to be super into it on Saturday. He's kicking a football everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. He's yelling "Go Ducks" around the house, and I'm building this up to like this is a monumental moment in fatherhood for me, and I hope he doesn't let me down.
So you think you're molding something now at his age?
I think
he's
it's
not going to remember this at all.
It's happening right now.
He's going to look and at a photo. I'm like, you took me to that game?
Right in front of my own eyes, he's getting into it. Every day I walk into the house, I say, what are we going to yell on Saturday? He says, go Ducks!
Okay.
I mean, I got a shot here. Damn. I got a shot. Full review will come on Monday.
It's going to blow my mind when you come in and you're like, I can't believe he's going into kindergarten. I'm going to go, what? He's
what?
Kindergarten already?
What? He's almost 3, man. What the hell happened?
It's crazy.
Time flies, dude.
Time does fly. There's no doubt. I am excited about it. I have a segment today.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go through what is the most exciting bad game with good team you're looking forward to watching.
Ooh, I like that.
Because of the good team involved. Even if you think that good team's going to wax that other team by 35 or more.
Right, right.
What is the team that you're most excited? You just want to see them operate. You want to see.
How's it look?
How's it look? Do they struggle? Do they come out the gate ready to go? Are they clean? Are they crisp? Are they struggling? Like, I want to get into some of that because you went over the slate yesterday and it got my gears turning yesterday or when I got home doing the show prep.
Right.
Of like, I was going through the schedule and I'm like, I hear what he's saying, but like, I kind of want to see this team and how they look. And okay. All right. That's an underrated. Like, I went through the schedule and I want to know what teams, even if you think they win in blowout fashion, you're excited to see play during the weekend because it, you know, it's here.
It's
this
here,
This is
man.
Week one. They're all going to play now. There's no weird week zero where they're in Ireland and there's 5 other games. And the biggest talking point is, can you believe the attendance at a college football game sucked?
Like, right. It's all
we're talking
about all week.
There's going to be real takeaway football stuff this weekend.
Yes.
Even for the good teams that end up beating the bad teams.
Well, I also love, too, the best thing about week one in college football is how spread out it is. And so you're going to get interesting game on Thursday night. You're going to get a couple interesting games on Friday night. You got the slate on Saturday. There's games on Sunday. There's a game on Monday.
Yeah.
And so it's like a 5-day football extravaganza that leads into, we're 1 week away, by the way, from the start of the NFL season.
We are.
1 week from today.
The Seahawks will be kicking off a week from right now
Seahawks
on the Fan.
And Pats right here on the Fan.
Does that mean, so primetime's off early that day, correct?
They're off completely. The pregame starts at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, 5 o'clock kick, 2-hour pregame.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great day.
It's a great day.
They get to just do whatever they want all day.
A Monday Labor Day off and a Wednesday Seahawk Day off.
Kick the feet up and enjoy opening night of NFL action.
We call that living the dream, baby.
Yeah, that is nice.
We call that living the dream. Nice.
Any Seahawk game scheduled for 7 a.m.?
Are they playing an Australia Tuesday game by chance?
Can we move a London game to a Monday and get the day off? Yeah. That'd be great.
Maybe there'll be a bad weather thing in London and they'll have to move the game a day to Monday and we'll get a free day off. Huh? What do you think?
Well, it's a busy show today. There's a lot to get to, a lot to discuss. We've got a lot of audio. Like, We're going to have more audio outside of the Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague, which will open up coming up at 7 a.m. It is a stat or story Wednesday. Do you have your stat and story ready?
I do. I'm ready to go.
Okay. We'll give you an update on stat or story and how all of that's going to work once football season really gets kicking into gear. But we'll roll on with the dirty pull is where we're actually going to start. So the 6:30 is now becoming our dirty pull stop. Curious
well,
to see.
We got some Eastern time zone teams.
No doubt about it. The number three team in all the land. Who does Dirt think that is? We're going to have a good friend of the program jump on next to give us the full rundown as the Dirty Pole preview rolls on with the number three team in all the land of college football. It's good to be in. Let's get it going on a hump day edition. Dirt and Sprague 105.1, The Fan.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. The Dirty Poll rolls on at the 6:30 segment as number three, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, preseason top 12. Wow. Talk about hot takes. The defending champions don't even get top two consideration.
Nah, prove it again. New year. I don't care what you did last year. You got to go do it again.
You know, destroying Oregon the second time they
Fernando
play.
Mendoza running out of that locker room this year.
Some say Josh Hoover's better. Better.
He's a better furry, that's for sure.
He is a better furry.
He's got a better outfit on.
Indiana is the number three team in all of the land. We're going to get Don Fisher here, longtime voice of basketball football. Very quickly, how close to consideration were they for you of one or two?
It was tough. I think the point of college football this year that's great is that you could probably interchange all seven of the top teams in whatever order you want to go in. I just looked at, the reason I put him three was because there is, and again, Indiana's been the outlier for everything in college football, so they might be the outlier again this year. When you lose the number one overall pick and a Heisman Trophy winner, go look through the history of college football. There is a regression that happens. Now, Indiana proved that they can be an outlier last year.
Keep bucking your trends, buddy.
Maybe they buck that trend again, but that was the reason I put them at number three. That's just a hard thing to replace no matter how good you think Hoover's going
to be. Very interesting. There's a certain team locally that has not been named yet. Did you have them above the defending champions?
I don't know. Maybe they're not in the top 12. You have no idea.
A longtime voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, one of our favorites out there in college football land. Don Fisher, the longtime voice for the Hoosiers, joining us now as Indiana's number three, according to my co-host, Andy Dirt Johnson, as the preseason top 12 dirty poll rolls on. Don, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us. I want to start something here. I'm going to date myself a little bit, and I don't know if you want to date yourself a little bit, but we talked with you last year. We talked with you year before. We talked about how unreal it was, how crazy it was that you went from calling all these big basketball games to suddenly look at the football team. You got to call a national champion college football team last year. And I just want to ask, despite how good we all knew they were and seeing them finish it off, I sit here on September the 2nd to tell you, I think 11-year-old me, his brain is still broken that Indiana was the best team in college football. What about Don Fisher?
Well, my brain's not broken, but it never was really good before it didn't break. So, no, I can tell you this, the surprise that everybody had around the country was, it was a surprise. No, there's no question about that. But I think I told you guys when we talked a couple of years ago that I thought this guy was going to be a big time winner. And I don't think there's any doubt that that's happened. He backs everything that he has set up in spades. And then, of course, to go to a national championship game last year at 15-0, and everything was just surreal, if you know what I'm saying. Because I've done Indiana football for 53 years prior to this coming season, and I can only tell you it's never been anything like that. And it's never been even important to a lot of people. That are Indiana alums. Most of the alums would talk about basketball and nothing else other than from a sports perspective. They'd talk about basketball and not even think about Indiana as a football power. But now all of a sudden, everything has changed. Then there's no question about it. And it was, like I said, a surreal thing for me.
Yeah, I think everybody around the country had that same thought, and nobody's questioning Kurt Cignetti anymore. Let's get to the most important position on the field, and that is you replace Fernando Mendoza, number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. A year ago, I think those of us who had watched him on the West Coast thought, you know, there's something there. He had moments at Cal, but not the best supporting cast around him, and then obviously just a fairy tale story for him last year. What is the thought about how Hoover is kind of filling his shoes? A very similar situation of a guy who's maybe a little underrated at TCU, and they certainly didn't look like they improved a quarterback with him moving on this past weekend in Dublin. What's the thought of, at quarterback, and how's Hoover fitting in here in year one?
Well, the interesting thing about Josh Hoover to me is that he is not Fernando Mendoza in the sense of size. Fernando was 6'5", and he could run. Now, he wasn't the quickest guy in the world, but he could run. And Josh Hoover is a guy that's like 6'1", at best. I think they list him at 6'2", but everybody does that. We know that, right?
Right.
Anyway, he's listed at 6'2". I don't think he might be 6 foot, but he is quick and he's athletic and he's got the same calmness as a guy that 2 years ago ran the program. And that was Curtis Rourke at the quarterback spot. He's got that same kind of calmness that Curtis had. Now, whether he could read defenses like Curtis could or not, I don't know that yet because we haven't seen him in action in that regard, but everything about this kid tells me that Kurt Cignetti knew exactly what he was doing when he got him, because if Kurt Cignetti doesn't vet you, then you're not even on the team. Mm. And he vets every kid. And I think he is a quarterback whisperer, because I think this guy knows exactly what he's looking for when he goes out to find a transfer portal quarterback. And this guy fits the bill perfectly in his mind. If that's the case, then he's going to be really good at Indiana, too.
Yeah, the voice of Indiana football and men's basketball, longtime voice, is Don Fisher here. Indiana is number three. How shocked were you? We talked about this after they won. It was probably about a month or two after they won. Oregon has not won a title. They've come close, and all they get for it is they lose their coordinators every other year, it feels like. How shocked were you that Indiana didn't lose their coordinators?
Well, I'm not shocked by it simply because both Mike Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, and the defensive coordinator, Bryant Haynes, have been with Cignetti for years. These two guys revere Kurt. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They love the culture that Cignetti has built and the fact that these guys, once they get their work done, they can go home to their families. Cignetti has always been a guy that is the first thing he talks about in regard to practices and those kinds of things is less is more, because he doesn't believe in keeping guys, you know, for 16 hours a day to get ready for the next football game, that kind of thing. He believes if you've got your work done, go home to your family. And it's the same way with his players. They go an hour and 50 minutes in practice. It is the most impressive practice that I've ever seen. And in these 2.5 years, nothing has changed at this point about how he goes about his business in that regard. And so the players aren't put in a position where they're going out there with, of course, nobody does 2-a-days anymore, but there are still some practices that are 2.5 to 3 hours long. That's never happened at Indiana since Kurt Cignetti's been here. So I just think those guys really appreciate what he does as a head coach, number one. How he involves them in everything, how they run their segment of the program. In other words, the wide receivers coach is the wide receivers coach. And he makes up practice schedules for all these coaches and then lets those guys do their job. And I just think the way he goes about it is amazing. Number one, because he is not a micromanager, but he will address anything that he sees that he doesn't like immediately, and that changes immediately because these guys know how good this guy is.
Yeah, it's funny. That's a lesson I think we could take in a lot of areas away from football. Sometimes being concise with your time and, you know, managing it more properly could be something that can make everything more efficient. That's a lesson that we should take away outside of football. I know that they have a couple of guys who are hoping to play this year, a couple of fifth-year defensive linemen that got hurt, you know, very unfortunately late in the season for them. didn't quite get the opportunity in the NFL because of that. I'm having a hard time following all these court cases and who's available to play and who's not available to play. My head's spinning. So just looking at your situation, like, what do we know about that? Because I believe I read that they're practicing, but we're not quite sure if they're going to be available or ready to play for game one. What's the latest on a couple of maybe big-time pieces on that defensive line?
Well, there's nothing has changed over the last couple of days or 3 days or 4 days, whatever it's been, since they decided that these kids would not be eligible now, since they decided beforehand that they would be eligible. And it is the most confounding thing in the world how the rules change every day simply because of lawsuits and all those kinds of things. So, and I'm an old school guy. I don't like any of it. But I do like the fact that Indiana has the opportunity maybe of getting both these guys back to play again. They are allowed to practice. So both of them are practicing with the football team right now. But we're just waiting for the next shoe to fall, so to speak, in regard to what the NCAA decides or what the courts decide for the NCAA. Mm. It's just confounding in that context. And these two guys are in limbo right now. And that's the only thing you can say about it. And I don't know any more than anybody else does because we know the rules change almost daily.
Yeah, I look at the wide receiver group, Don, and last year they ended up being such a stacked group. Becker really kind of showed out in the midway point of the season, became one of their more reliable targets. He's back again, so that's a huge pickup. And then you get Nick Marsh transferring in, who's an interesting receiver in the traditional NFL sense, had a little bit of a diva-like quality, it seemed like, at Michigan State. He comes in, there's a gold clique controversy. Cignetti's like, I don't like this. I'm curious how Nick Marsh is filling in and settling in Indiana when you have such a stacked group, and a group I would say, I don't know if it's their best positional group, but it's one, as you mentioned, with Cignetti and quarterbacks, it's kind of one at Indiana that I think I just trust blindly, even if I don't know all the names.
I think you're right there, and here's what I would tell you. It wasn't a problem when Nick, after he was told, you don't do that here at Indiana, put on gold shoes for the first practice. I mean, that was crazy, but here's the thing. The kid took it in stride. He has been model citizen ever since. It's nothing. He wasn't, I think he was doing it just for show and that kind of thing, which guys do sometimes. But he found out very quickly it doesn't work at Indiana. And the fact of the matter is he has looked great in practices. He's adapted to everything and the culture that Cignetti has produced. And without doubt, I don't think there's been anybody that believes that Nick Marsh isn't going to be a star at Indiana this year as well. And it's not going to be controversial in any way.
Yeah, everybody loves and respects the defensive coordinator, the job they did last year. I know we just talked about a couple of guys maybe on the D-line that could be back. We're waiting in limbo. Their D-tackles are back. The front seven seems to be mostly intact. What do we make of the defense? Maybe some new faces in the secondary. What are the thoughts on that group and some of the maybe turnover we had from last year to this year?
Well, the one area that may be the strongest positional area on the football team right now is the defensive line. There's a belief that this is a better defensive line than it was a year ago, and two of the guys that were starters last year, Tyreek Tucker and Mario Landino, those two kids are the inside guys. They got two starting edge rushers on the outside. Two kids from Kansas State that Indiana got out of the transfer portal. They were the starters at Kansas State. Now they're the starters at Indiana. Neither of their pronunciations of their last names are easy, and that's why I haven't brought them up at this point. But both these guys are really talented kids. Chidi is the first kid that we'll talk about in that sense. Because Chidi is a different, he's an interesting guy, but both these guys have tremendous experience, and that's why they were brought in from the portal. And there's no doubt in my mind that defensive line may be better than it was a year ago, and that's saying something because they were pretty doggone good in that area last year. But I think the other thing about the defense, they did lose D'Angelo Pons, who was just tremendous, an All-American each of the 2 years he was at Indiana, and an All-American as a freshman when he was at JMU. He was phenomenal. That spot is taken over by Jamari Sharp, who moves over from the other side last year. That's where he played opposite D'Angelo. He is now the guy in charge of the short side of the field, and he's going to be, I think he's going to be terrific at it. And he is one of the most improved players on this football team over the last two or three years. So I think that spot's taken, and I think it'll be great. They've got some veterans in the backfield. Amari Farrell's been here for 4 years now. He's a starter his third year, without question. He is one of the stars of this ball club as well. The safety spot is not as deep as it has been in the past. I think that's one area that they'd like to have a couple of guys start to show something, but I don't know how good they'll be in that area. I just do think this. I think the defense, because of Bryant Haynes, the coordinator, on the defensive side of the football, is one of the brightest and smartest guys I've ever been around. In that regard, I think he will have these guys playing tremendous defense, but there could be some weaknesses if somebody gets hurt.
Last one for you here, Don, because we appreciate the time. I'm not going to ask you anything corny, like how far do you think they'll get? They're really good. They might win the title again. We'll have to wait and see on that. I'll ask you this. You've been around the program and the university for a long time. You're probably more used to seeing basketball have sustained excellence, and they've since kind of fallen a little bit, and here's the football team rising up and telling me Mark Cuban's an alum. Those are things that I've just now learning. We know they're well-funded and supported now that they're good and the most relevant football team right now. I'm curious what you could tell us out here out west, what kind of impact you've seen from what these last two seasons have been in football at the university itself, and what people talk to you about when you're not on the air.
Well, the biggest thing about this program right now is the fan base that was non-existent before the last couple of years. I mean, we had fans that would show up. They might sell out, might sell somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 18,000 season tickets in a 54,000 seat stadium. And then at halftime, nobody was there after the kickoff of the second half got underway. That was, and I don't say nobody, but obviously the crowds were never, never like this. They have sold out the last 2 years now of every single ticket. The prices have gone up dramatically, of course. And there's no doubt that football is now a major factor in Indiana where it never was in the last 75 years for the most part. This is a program that was really, really, from the standpoint of Division I football, a question mark whether they could stay Division I if, in fact, they continued to play it. And now all of a sudden, it's a football powerhouse. It's unbelievable to change.
It really is. 15,000 out of 54 is like a USC Saturday. So, for some people, that's a good weekend. Don Fisher, our great guest, longtime voice of the Indiana Hoosiers program, giving us the preview as number 3 Indiana on the top 12 preseason dirty poll. Don, thank you. I'm sure we'll catch up with you at some point during the season. Have some great calls. Learn all the new names. And it's going to be a fun one, I'd imagine, defending the crown.
We're looking forward to it. Thanks very much for having me, guys.
All right, there we go. Don Fisher, the legendary longtime voice of Indiana, who comes in at number 3 on
great
the top
pipes,
12 dirty
man.
Pool.
God, his pipes are good, are they not? That old-timey radio guy has been around forever. So good.
I don't want to share show secrets, and I don't know what people hear and don't hear when one mic is on and the other is off. I felt like having Don on made you clear your throat 88 times during that interview. Yeah.
I want to get a little bit lower.
I kept hearing that.
Don.
You can't match Don Fisher. Those are great pipes.
I got a horrible voice. He's got a golden voice, dude. He's the golden goose.
So number 3 for Indiana, defending the crown. And the funny thing is you look at the roster and the depth chart, Dirt, I know we got to go.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious to me because their recipe is quite clear, and you're seeing programs, I think, start to copy it. Virginia, we noted, senior, junior, redshirt, senior, redshirt, senior, redshirt, yeah. senior, junior, redshirt, junior, and you're like, well, all these guys have 4-plus years experience basically up and down the roster, and that's how Cignetti gets it done. Should be an interesting season to defend the crown. I want to stay in college football and ask you this question going into the break. What is the good team playing in the bad game you're most excited to see how they operate, even if you think they're going to win in blowout fashion? The good team against the bad team in some of the duddier-ish categoried games for week one. We'll get into that coming up next on 105.1 The Fan.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague will open up at the top of the hour. College football, you brought it up yesterday, and you suggested a dud weekend. I got excited for Wisconsin-Notre Dame at Lambeau. You talked about watching an FCS game Thursday and then poo-pooed that somehow. I wasn't really...
I don't want to say dud weekend. I'm jacked for football. There's just not a lot of marquee matchups, and that's okay. It's going to happen throughout the course of the year. The Wisconsin one, I'm just not... I don't go mentally to a place where that game's going to be competitive, but
that's
maybe...
That's totally fine.
Maybe Wisconsin proves me wrong this year.
Well, I think we highlight this. How many weekends during the season would you categorize marquee? Key, and I think that's the hard thing, right? Like, there's games we care about, but not necessarily, I think, would fall into the marquee category. So it got me thinking yesterday because I was evaluating my own opinion, and I said, you know what? How many teams play this weekend in games that don't necessarily interest me?
Yeah,
that I would probably tune into a decent chunk of because I want to see what these teams look like, even if they're up by 20.
Right,
I want to see how they're going to operate. Like, when you look at the schedule, who registers like that for you?
I have two easy picks right off the top of my head, looking at the slate.
Because I have one that I think is flying under the radar, and it is a fascinating one because of how it's set up.
So I'm going to, not to just because we did the segment, it's the team that we just talked about.
Indiana.
Indiana's going to kick the crap out of North Texas, at least we assume. They struggled with Old Dominion in week one last year, which made everybody kind of who was an Indiana doubter go, ha, look at that, Indiana won't be very good. And then they ran the table. So even if it's a competitive game, you shouldn't draw any grand conclusions. But just seeing how Hoover operates in their offense. Do they miss a beat at all in the secondary? North Texas is certainly replacing almost everybody on their roster because their coach left and a lot of their guys are now at Oklahoma State, and Oregon will see them in a week. But just seeing how, like, Indiana with some new faces doing it again as a top six team in the country, I'm really curious to see how their operation unfolds. And then the other one for me would be at 12:30 on ESPN. And it's not necessarily because of the Pac-12 tie-in, although that does have something to do with it. But Texas State is at Texas. And of all the teams in the top 10, like, we try and circle the ones, somebody in the top 10 is going to fall on their
30
face.
30.5-point underdog, by the way.
Indiana is or Texas?
No, Texas State.
Texas State. Somebody in the top 10 is going to fall on their face. Mm-hmm. And if I could tell you who it was, I'd be in Vegas right now and not doing this radio show. Texas, though, is one that I have circled of, like, man, there just seems to be a weird energy around that program. I played an audio clip when you were out on Friday from David Pollack where there's parents of freshman recruits who were criticizing the program on Twitter. They just had to dismiss a defensive starter for team rules or not following team rules. Nobody knows exactly what's going on there.
This is all about Texas.
This is all about Texas. Of just like, this seems like a powder keg that could explode.
The coach was in a very hot seat.
They have Ohio State next week. Yep. If you lose that game at home, the schedule following that is brutal. Like, that's just one that I'm eyeballing early. And so Texas State, there's a benefit of they're going to play Washington State and Oregon State. People keep telling me Texas State is good.
Sure.
How do they look? Can they hang for a quarter? Can they hang for a half down in Austin? And then, dude, remember Texas early in the year last year, dude? Their offense was terrible.
Took them a while to get going.
Some of it was Ohio State, but also the next week they played like San Jose State at home, and it was like 10-7 at halftime. It was uncomfortable. And so do they get off to a slow start looking ahead to Ohio State? Those are the two that I'm circling of, like, I'm just curious how they look. Indiana, can they come out and be the machine that some think they can be? And then Texas, do they show cracks in the foundation that make you go, uh-oh, I'm worried about where that's going?
And I think you would probably say to anybody that's hearing you say Indiana, it's not you saying Indiana because you think they're in trouble. It's just simply...
It's just new faces.
Is it going to operate and look just as clean? And maybe week one it doesn't, but, like, do they come out humming? I'll give you two, okay? And one of them's not a marquee team, but they're interesting. The first one is Michigan, Western Michigan. I think Michigan's going to end up rolling them. But almost everybody is out on Underwood.
Yeah.
He's got a serious head coach now who's not stooping a staffer. Like, maybe this operation's going to be more ready to go year one than we think.
You see the slimy report that came out from Utah about Whittingham?
No.
Former players accused him of pushing them back from playing from injury quicker than they were ready.
I mean...
And he had to come out and be like, I never did that. That's
fine.
It's like, where is this coming out of left field, dude? We didn't hear that for 20 years.
I want to see, like, does Underwood come out and have a great day in front of the home crowd? Because that's going to make, I think, everybody breathe a little bit of, like, okay, I can do this. I just need to settle in, and I got a good coach now. And the second one, non-marquee team, but interesting nonetheless with a slight local tie-in. A 12:45 ESPN kick in 99-degree weather. I need to see what Eric Morris and Mestemaker are. Oklahoma State is at Tulsa.
Yeah.
And that is like a, oh, is this going to hum the same way it did at North Texas? Now you're at Stillwater.
They like Tulsa on fire on the road in week one. And all of a sudden you look ahead to that game next week. It's a little more compelling.
You say, yeah, I mean, yeah. Maybe they won't lose 69-3 the way they did last year. There's not a go whoop their ass.
Well, they
know?
Get 69 next week. We'll
I got one on
out.
Friday night. Miami is at Stanford at 6 o'clock on ESPN.
Mario loves playing at Stanford.
He does.
That's a 9 o'clock local kick for Miami fan.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a
late kick.
What does Darian Mensah look like?
Yeah.
And then more about the Miami defense. They had some key guys get drafted into the NFL. Can that defense, is there enough left over for them to be just as dominant? Or, you know, everybody thinks they're going to run a rough shot through the ACC, be in the college football playoff, and then can they get back close to being in the title game again? But Virginia caught our eye in week zero. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, they look serious.
Yep.
Georgia Tech plays Colorado Thursday night, yep. Probably the most interesting game on Thursday night.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
I want to see if Miami can reload, or was that a special group?
Yeah.
I've seen some Oregon fans trying to warn Miami fan this week of like, just be leery with the Mario Stanford stuff. It doesn't make sense. It's really weird.
Has he lost to them since losing that one year?
I'll never forget his first year. They had a 30-point lead at home and blew it, and he didn't take a knee, and they fumbled, and they gacked.
Was it 30?
They were maybe not 30, but it was
30. Dude, you're talking about when he was running the clock out with Verdell?
It was, I want to say it was 28. I mean, it was crazy that lead.
He ran to the short side. He fumbled. I remember that play.
They snapped the ball over Herbert's head on the 1 yard line, and it got ran all the way back for a touchdown the other way.
Right, yeah.
And then obviously the year that they beat Ohio State.
Yeah, they go in and lose
2 weeks later,
and
you lost to a 3-9 Stanford team.
So. Sneaky one here. Baylor Auburn is a under the radar. Neither these teams being picked. I want to see A&M and how they operate because they're not on the dirty pole.
They are not. A&M's not a top 12 team. Spoiler alert.
And Tennessee's playing Furman, so should win by 40, but they're starting a true freshman. And I'm always interested in seeing true freshmen start.
Yeah.
So it may not, most of these games we're naming may not end up being, from an outcome standpoint, great. My whole point is like there's so many teams I'm fascinated to see the operation, how they come out the gate, who takes care of their business, who plays with their food, who outright looks like they're not very good and barely wins. It's going to happen.
Yes.
It just always does. That's what college gives us. So,
yep.
Interesting slate week one. We'll have more college football as we move on. But let's get into hour number two, Cafe Day Dirt and Spray. We open it up next on 105.1 The Fan.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.